right, everybody, welcome back. We are diving deep today, and well, we're tackling a big one.
Yeah.
The war on drugs.
It's a big one.
It is. It is. And, you know, obviously we could spend, I mean, years talking about all the different aspects of it. But today we're going to be honing in on, I guess we could say, some unintended consequences, some things that maybe weren't really on the radar, you know, back when all this was getting kicked off.
Right.
And we're going to be looking at this through the lens of a video that we found from Miss Media on YouTube. Really, really interesting stuff. And they take this real life case study approach to kind of illustrate their point. And it's pretty gripping. So, yeah, buckle up. We're going to cover some heavy stuff today.
Yeah. I mean, this is really about, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. And this is the prime example of that.
Yeah.
So the story, the case study that we're going to be looking at is a guy named Frank Potts. And back in 1982,
okay,
he was convicted of child molestation.
Oh.
Yeah. And sentenced to 15 years. So, you know.
That's a pretty hefty sentence.
Hefty, yeah. You would think, okay, this guy's going to be off the streets for a while.
Right, right.
But here's the thing. Despite parole reports flagging him as a danger to the public.
Okay.
He was granted early release in 1988.
So he served 6 years.
6 years, yeah.
So this is a 15-year sentence.
Of a 15-year sentence.
So my question is why? Why would somebody, especially when you're talking about, you know, crimes against children.
Right.
Why on earth would they release this person back into the public when there's a very good chance that they're going to reoffend?
That's the question, right? Like what kind of pressure, what kind of situation?
Yeah, what circumstance
leads to this kind of decision? And that's what's so fascinating about this video is they really dig into this.
Mm-hmm.
And they point to the 1986 Anti-Drug Abuse Act.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, the intention of that was to curb drug use.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the you know, consequences that came out of that was this massive spike in the prison population.
Okay. Yeah. Overcrowding is a huge problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of a sudden you have this this logistical nightmare, right? Mm-hmm. You got way too many people in the system.
So you gotta start letting people out.
Yeah.
Well, who are you gonna let out? That's the question.
Exactly. Exactly. And so this is where things get really, really tricky. And because what ended up happening was authorities started releasing violent criminals.
Wow.
Early to make space for
non-violent drug offenders.
Sure.
So people that maybe had, you know, possession or were dealing or, you know, any number of non-violent drug offenses.
And so, you know, you can probably see where this is going.
Yeah.
Tragically, Frank Potts, this child predator,
mm-hmm,
benefited from a policy that was meant to reduce drug use.
Right.
He gets out.
Yeah.
And commits more horrific crimes.
And it makes you wonder, you know, how many other people were released that went on to reoffend in a similar fashion.
It's really chilling to think about.
Yeah.
But this case really highlights what the video refers to as the Iron Law of Prohibition. Have you ever heard of that?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
It basically says that if you try to ban something, you try to prohibit something, the black market is going to prioritize whatever is the most potent, most easily concealable, most profitable version of that thing.
Right, right.
It makes sense.
So you see this with alcohol prohibition, right?
Okay.
I mean, it was a lot easier to smuggle a flask of moonshine,
right,
than it was a keg of beer.
Mm-hmm.
So you had people getting alcohol poisoning, going blind,
yeah,
all these crazy things happening.
And I think that's a really great analogy because it really helps to, you know, kind of wrap your head around this concept.
And that same thing is happening with the war on drugs.
Totally. Totally.
You know, if you're a drug dealer, you're thinking, well, how can I maximize my profit and minimize my risk?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for the most compact, potent substance that I can get my hands on. And that's what's happening with fentanyl.
Yeah. And for folks who maybe aren't super familiar, I mean, fentanyl is a synthetic opioid.
Yeah, it's really cheap to produce, and it's something like 50 times more potent than heroin.
Yeah, and it's so potent and it's so cheap that it's, you know, dealers are mixing it with other drugs.
Right, and that's what's causing so many overdoses.
Yeah.
People think that they're getting, you know, a bag of heroin or maybe even just like a prescription painkiller.
Right.
But it's laced with fentanyl, and a tiny amount can kill you.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, this doesn't really happen with legal substances, you know?
It's true.
Like, and you don't hear about...
You never hear about fentanyl-laced beer.
Right.
Or wine.
Because they're regulated. You pretty much know what you're getting when you buy a bottle of wine. the potency is controlled.
Right.
And there's really not a lot of incentive to mess with that.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, and this really all ties back into what we were talking about with the unintended consequences, you know, this iron law of prohibition. With the war on drugs, the intentions were good. We want to protect people, but it's actually making things a lot more dangerous for drug users because of these unforeseen market forces.
Right, right. And again, that's what's so, you know, thought-provoking about this video is it really highlights that complexity. It's not just a simple, oh, well, you know, drugs are bad and we need to get rid of all drugs. It's so much more nuanced than that.
Absolutely.
And we have to look at the bigger picture.
And, you know, it begs the question, are these policies actually achieving what they set out to do? You know, are there unintended consequences that are causing harm? And are there other approaches that we could be taking, maybe things that focus on harm reduction instead of just punishment, that could lead to better outcomes?
That's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the best path forward?
And that's something for everyone to consider. We need to have these conversations. We need to be willing to look at the evidence and be open to different perspectives, because the status quo, it's clearly not working.
It's not. And, you know, like we always say, you know, think locally, right?
Yeah.
So what can folks in Deer Park and La Porte and Pasadena, what can we do? What kind of impact can we have on this issue? And I think, you know, a big part of it is just staying informed.
Right.
Educating ourselves, having these conversations, and really just being aware of the complexities of this issue. So, you know, if you're in the Deer Park, La Porte, Pasadena area, and you're feeling like, man, I want to get involved. Mm-hmm. I want to help make a difference. You know, head over to our website, thinkadactlocally.com.
That's right.
And you can actually donate.
Yeah. Every little bit helps.
Yeah. Every little bit helps. The link will be in the show notes. But yeah, just want to thank everybody for joining us on this pretty heavy deep dive today.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
All right. Take care.
Bye.